This is a republic if you can keep it, with former Democratic Party Chairman Mark Brewer and former Republican Party Executive Director Jeff Timmer.
Welcome to A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Jeff Timmer.
And I'm Mark Brewer. It seems like the same lead every week. It has been still another big and sometimes bizarre week in politics, both in Michigan and nationally.
We should start with a big development in what may become the pivotal issue in Michigan this fall. Mark, you were right in the middle of it with a victory in the Michigan Court of Claims on the rights of women to control their bodies when it comes to abortion decisions. Why don't you tell us a bit about what happened? Explain it to us laymen who aren't lawyers.
Right. Well, thanks, Jeff. Well, we all know that it looks like Roe v. Wade is on its last legs. You know, we saw the draft opinion a couple weeks ago that indicates our 5 votes on the United States Supreme Court to overrule it. That would cause or allow a Michigan criminal statute, which actually dates to the 1840s, to take effect, which makes assisting, providing in any way an abortion in this state a felony. I mean, it's a criminal abortion ban. I also believe that women could get caught up into it as well. Patients could be charged under this statute. So it's a very draconian, terrible law. It's basically been in suspension because of Roe versus Wade. But when Roe goes away, that law will take effect. So my clients, Planned Parenthood and their medical director, very courageously have seen what's coming and filed a lawsuit in the Court of Claims asking for 2 things. One, because of the chaos that is coming when Roe is overturned and the uncertainty, that the court issue an order maintaining the status quo. You know, protect the status quo regarding abortion in Michigan, still legal under the Roe framework, etc. While the underlying complaint in the case, which is that there is a state constitutional right to abortion based on a wide variety of Michigan constitutional provisions, that state constitutional right protects the right to choose in the state. So that lawsuit was filed several weeks ago, and we were very pleased yesterday when Chief Judge Elizabeth Gleischer of the Michigan Court of Claims issued an opinion granting us that injunction, that first portion of the relief that we asked for, that said, yes, while this case is pending and we resolve the question of whether there's a right to choose under the Michigan Constitution, we are going to maintain the status quo in Michigan, notwithstanding what happens with Roe in the United States Supreme Court, so that my clients and millions of women and abortion providers around the state can be assured that they're not going to get prosecuted by 83 county prosecutors or investigated and charged by 83 county sheriffs, that there is this umbrella, this safe haven of this court order now protecting them from prosecution and from that uncertainty. The attorney general was directed to advise all the county prosecutors in the state that they are subject to this injunction, and the attorney general promptly did that yesterday afternoon. So all these prosecutors are on notice now. I mean, Roe could be overturned literally any day, Jeff. I mean, the court often waits until late June to make these controversial decisions public, but it could happen any time. So it's really important to get this injunction in place and provide certainty and safety to all these women and to abortion providers and others in the state. So we will now proceed in the case to a decision on the merits, on the underlying claim that we have that there is a state constitutional right to abortion. And that'll be the next phase of the case. But I can't tell you, this was an enormous relief to my clients, and I'm sure to millions of women and others, around the state, that this, threat of criminal prosecution that's been looming over all of us for a long time now because of the threat to Roe is gone. Now, there are going to be further judicial proceedings, of course, but this was a tremendous step forward yesterday. And I think we'll have, as we've talked about before, a political impact this fall. This case is probably ultimately going to be decided by the Michigan Supreme Court, whether there's a state constitutional right to choose. There's already a case pending in the Michigan Supreme Court brought by the governor, who's a very firm advocate and defender of the right to choose. And I'll also say kudos to Attorney General Nessel, who, even though she was the defendant in the case yesterday, agreed when the decision came out that it was a great victory for the rights of women, and she is not going to appeal the case. There may be others that will try to appeal the injunction, but to her credit, she recognized how important this is and has decided not to appeal. So thanks, Jeff, for letting me kind of lay all that out for people. I'll just add one final thing. This is an important national case as well. Not only was Planned Parenthood very visionary and courageous in bringing this lawsuit in Michigan, but as far as I know, there's no other suit like it anywhere in the country. And so this is really pathbreaking and pioneering, and hopefully will encourage groups in other states to look to their state laws, look to their state constitutions to protect the right to choose when Roe falls. And this, our result yesterday should be an inspiration to them to do that in these states where there are very draconian criminal abortion laws just waiting to be enforced.
Thank you for that explanation. That's very enlightening. And just so that I can try to understand and wrap my simple mind around this a little better, because it's the Court of Claims, it that decision then now has the force of, I don't know, statewide law.
Yes.
I guess should a crusading county prosecutor or sheriff choose to take a different approach, there's what does this give the attorney general or the governor the ability to intercede and prevent that locality from taking action in this instance?
Yes, this is a statewide order. The Court of Claims is a statewide court. It has jurisdiction, in this case, over the attorney general and over all of these prosecutors, because under the law of Michigan, these county prosecutors are supervised by the attorney general. And so, yes, if one of those prosecutors were to defy this court order, if Roe should fall and we get into that situation, then they could be held in contempt, frankly, for violating this injunction. And again, one of the purposes of giving notice to all these prosecutors yesterday, and that's standard procedure when an injunction like this is issued, that a notice goes out so that they can't claim they didn't know, right? They were sent a copy of the opinion yesterday, and the attorney general advised them of what the decision said. So they're all on notice now that if and when Roe falls, they cannot enforce that criminal abortion statute.
Given the psychology and the politics of the issue and the psychology of those involved, I can see that, there might be some prosecutor out there that's seeing this as an opportunity, for political grandstanding and, would look to make this in themselves, a spectacle standing up to, the rule of law. It's not like the rule of law has been exactly constraining for Republicans these last few years. And so I could see that, an attorney general or a prosecutor with their eye on a future run for, say, attorney general or judge or something else in their area might look to make a name for themselves. And obviously nothing would prevent them from taking that action, but there are remedies that would be available from the statewide perspective to protect women and say, Dowajak from being prosecuted or, Hillsdale. So.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, we hope, people will respect the laws. They say that they are. This is an excellent, thorough order, thorough opinion. And it applies to everybody anywhere in Michigan. And people should respect that. But you're right, Jeff. There could well be political grandstanding by people with current or future political ambitions on this issue. I have no doubt there's going to be pressure from groups like Right to Life and others to either appeal this injunction or defy it in some fashion. But we'll take that as it comes. Again, this is a tremendous victory, not only for Michigan women and Michigan residents, but also nationally yesterday. And again, I can't tell you how proud I am of Planned Parenthood for taking the lead on this kind of important issue.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
When candidates and government leaders need the facts about their voters, they turn to Practical Political Consulting.
PPC has served political candidates, organizations, campaigns, and businesses for more than 45 years. They work with savvy campaigns to provide the best voter lists available in Michigan, as well as campaign consulting, graphic design, and polling at competitive prices.
Over their storied history, PPC has worked with thousands of campaigns, providing them with, as the New York Times once said, quote, the best lists possible in this competitive state, along with unique and individualized strategy.
They've worked with small campaigns for rural school board, all the way up to occupants of the White House. They are also renowned for their work with ballot initiatives, both for challenges and protections.
Find out more. Go to www.practicalpoliticalconsulting.com or call 517-351-5105.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm whose principals have more than four decades of experience measuring public opinion on federal, state, and local issues, from who's ahead in a race for governor or Congress, to local support for a proposed zoning change.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, state agencies, local governments, and membership organizations across the state. Whether it's measuring voter opinions about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation enjoys public support, Epic MRA has been Michigan's premier go-to pollster for 30 years.
Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
But let's talk about, there's plenty of other stuff we want to talk about, Jeff, today. Let's turn to the ongoing fight against Trump's control for the soul of the Republican Party. He's pretty much got control of that soul here in Michigan, given what happened at the endorsement convention a couple weeks ago. But there are a number of candidates on the ballot around the country yesterday whom he endorsed. What's your take on what happened yesterday in Ohio and Pennsylvania, not Ohio, Pennsylvania and North Carolina and some of these other states?
Yeah, I think, one, Trump's muscle was still evident when it came to Mastriano, who is now going to be the Republican nominee for governor in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz, who looks like he's going to be the nominee for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. There were a couple of noted, MAGA defeats yesterday that some in the national media have been paying a lot of attention to. Madison Cawthorn, the very controversial freshman Republican from North Carolina, losing his primary, and the governor of Idaho winning his primary against his lieutenant governor, who Trump had endorsed. And I think that what's notable, it's not the scorecard of Trump's exact wins or losses when it comes to endorsements. It's how thoroughly Trump dominates the Republican political landscape, because even in those losses, even in the North Carolina race and in the Idaho race, for instance, Trump is still the dominant figure. The non-Trump endorsed candidates won largely because they were able to convince voters that they are, in fact, Trump supporters, even though Trump didn't endorse them. And even in the U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania, where Dr. Oz has just a very narrow statewide lead, 0.2% over investment banker, billionaire Dave McCormick. McCormick went out of his way, spent tens of millions of dollars to convince people that he was, in fact, a MAGA candidate. And so whether or not Trump's endorsement wins, and it looks like it's going to win more often than not and win in these important races. The one I should point out, North Carolina, sitting Congressman Ted Budd won the U.S. Senate primary, open U.S. Senate seat there, over the former Republican governor, Pat McCrory, who didn't even manage to get a quarter of the vote in a Republican primary. He ran as a traditional Republican. He ran on his own record and his own name without Trump. And that shows you he couldn't even get a quarter of the vote in today's Republican primary, because today's Republican primary voters are all about one thing, and that is Donald Trump and Donald Trump. That's what I think those results show, is how thoroughly Trumpified the party is, even in those rare instances where Donald Trump's endorsed candidate, the governor of Idaho, for example. You know, there's like, what, 12 people in Idaho, and the governor is probably cousins with more people than the lieutenant governor. So they managed to win. There were factors beyond Trump. They kind of had a satisfy the, you know, get to a certain level of Trump as an ante on the table, and then go on and have the rest of the race. And so I think that's what we're going to see. And that's what we're going to see in primaries across the country, is now this, we head into the kind of the home stretch of primaries in the states. And as we're looking at the one here in Michigan in August, candidates running to show just how America first, how MAGA, how crazy, how the 2020 election being stolen from Republicans is still the dominating issue in all of these races. That's what we need to watch, because there's been zero diminishment in any of that. And that just continues to gain steam. It's gaining momentum like a snowball going downhill.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Jeff. I think the way I would put it is Trumpism has become the floor. You've got to embrace Trumpism in order to win a primary in the Republican Party most of the time, almost all of the time. Does Trump endorsement help? Yeah, I know you don't like scorecards, but he did go 5-2 yesterday in congressional, Senate, and gubernatorial races. And that's not to be dismissed, right? I mean, this Madison Cawthorn, had so many other problems. I don't think anybody could have bailed him out. Thank goodness he's going to be gone. But no, I think you're right. Trumpism is the floor. But, if we take a closer look at some of these candidates, I mean, this Mastriano, who's going to be the Republican nominee for governor in Pennsylvania, he was part of the march on the Capitol on January 6th. We don't have any evidence that he breached the Capitol, but he was part of the march toward the Capitol. And he's been to conferences promoting QAnon and, all these election conspiracies. And Bund in Pennsylvania, I'm sorry, Bund that you mentioned from Carolina, is no different in terms of what he has personally endorsed and supported. From what I can tell, Democrats are very happy that those candidates were nominated in those races. It gives them a chance, I think, to pick up or hold a governorship or pick up a Senate seat, as the case may be. And so this is, again, the continuing trend we see around the country. And as you said, we're now going to watch the coming rush of primaries as we get into June and see if this holds. But I don't see any sign that the Trump fever is breaking in the Republican Party.
Oh, absolutely not. It just continues to grow. But I think that something you just said there underscores one of the potential dangers that we're facing in our politics right now. We had recently in Michigan, the Republican Party at their endorsement convention pick two certified QAnon loons, Matt DiPerno for Attorney General and Christina Caramo for Secretary of State. And so they fit the mold of these people like Doug Mastriano and Ted Budd. The danger is to underestimate the power of crazy and to underestimate these people are such cartoonish figures that sane people look and say, they can't win.
Well, we said the same thing about Trump in 2016 and look what happened.
Right. Yeah. But there's been some stories today about how the Republican Governors Association has been slow to say anything about Mastriano in Pennsylvania. So, it was the assumption that the Republican Governors Association, which brings millions of independent dollars into these campaigns, is going to bypass Pennsylvania. Great. what about when Michigan nominates whoever out of this Republican field and they're just like Doug Mastriano, and Arizona nominates Kerry Lake, who's just like Doug Mastriano, and Wisconsin nominates Rebecca Clyfesh, who's just like Doug Mastriano. The RGA is going to be playing in these states. It's not like they're going to say, you know, we need to stand on the side of democracy, and so we're not going to endorse candidates and support candidates in 2022 because they're all crazy. No, they're just going to put their money behind the crazy. And so what we're going to go into the fall, these people, they're not going to get cut off from the national money. We're going to have this. It's not just a battle for the soul of the Republican Party. We are in a pitch battle for the soul of American democracy and what that looks like in the future, if we even have one. And it's looking very dark, because all these states that really matter in determining who's going to be the next president in 2024, those key electoral vote states that I mentioned, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, Michigan, states like New Hampshire, there's dangerous candidates that are running in these places that are going to be winning seats, competing for offices like governor, competing for offices like secretary of state or attorney general in these states. And they're what exists in more cases than not are people who are vocally, emphatically committed to authoritarianism, to non-democratic, illiberal ideals, not political ideology. We're not talking about policy differences. This isn't about whether or not we should have balanced budget amendments or anything like that. More spending, less spending, higher taxes, lower taxes. This is about, do we have a fundamental and functioning democracy? And time and time again, the Republican candidates in state after state and office after office are answering resoundingly, no, if you elect us, you will not.
While there are many people who are, frankly, are from an electoral perspective, Jeff, are glad that these people have been nominated, because a lot of people in my party, right, say, oh, we can beat Mastriano, oh, we can beat Bud. But the danger is they are now one election away from being governor of Pennsylvania, senator from North Carolina. Same thing here in Michigan with Caramo and DiPerno, one election away from holding those positions. And so that's very, very scary proposition, as you just indicated. But let's take a look at an event here in Michigan this week, which I think has national implications beyond what was going on. And that is that we had Vice President Pence, former Vice President Pence, in the state to endorse the voucher petition drive supported by Betsy DeVos. Have we got a political marriage in the making here, Jeff, that could help Pence in 2024? What do you think?
Clearly, that's what Pence is doing, is trying to go around and satisfy deep-pocketed Republicans like the DeVos family. To me, there's no one in American politics more delusional, more pathetic, more sad than Mike Pence. I've joked on Twitter that Hillary Clinton stands as good of odds of being the next Republican nominee for president is that her odds are as good as winning the Republican nomination as Mike Pence's are. And that's not just a joke. It's true that you don't go from this MAGA dominated. You have to be a 2020 election denier, full blown MAGA. Those people were the ones who were saying hang Mike Pence on January 6, 2020, to somehow embracing Mike Pence as the standard bearer of the Republican Party. That party just doesn't exist. Mike Pence is this, like anybody who's sniffed the White House, been the vice president, been the nominee for the vice presidency. They see themselves as the potential nominee in the mirror. He appeals to a certain segment of donors in some of the activists in the Republican Party who still suffer from the delusion that there is a different Republican Party than the reality of the Republican Party before us, that Mike Pence did the right thing on January 6th and didn't refused to certify the electoral vote, that somehow makes him noble because he didn't subvert the Constitution and throw us into a riotous, crisis that we've never been in the country. That's not exactly the standard by which we need to be measuring political courage, but relative to how crazy and willing others most in the party are to throw those kinds of standards aside, the Republican Party in Michigan and this ballot drive in particular is they're suffering from a lack of enthusiasm from their donor base. There's Ron Weiser's experiencing this with the Michigan Republican Party. A lot of the institutional big dollar donors do not want to give to the party because the party, in their eyes, rightfully is batshit crazy, and they're nominated batshit crazy people, and they're going to fund batshit crazy candidates, and so they don't want their money going to that. And there's this kind of a donor table that's been set up by some of the check writing poobahs like Bobby Shostak and Doug DeVos, Dick DeVos's brother, Betsy's brother-in-law, and some others, big names who still suffer. I God love them. I think some of them have this, they have the right idea in mind, but the time to do something like that was 6 years ago. And they're still suffering from this delusion that, that this battle hasn't already taken place and already been won. And the outcome has already been determined long ago about where their party goes. They think that they're 6 years late to this fight. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing with the Mike Pence coming on this issue. He still appeals to some of those traditional Republicans who look and don't consider themselves, there are a few of them who don't consider themselves Donald Trump acolytes. They don't like Trump for whatever reason. And so they kind of sort of like Mike Pence. I don't think anybody is enthused about Mike Pence, probably isn't that enthused about himself. He's just not the kind of a politician that people get excited about. But that's what Mike Pence was doing here. And that's what that campaign was taking advantage of. And the, he was here to raise money and attention for that the voucher campaign, but also for Tom Barrett, the state senator, outgoing state senator, who's running against Alyssa Slotkin, who I think fits that MAGA America First candidate mold a lot. In almost every respect, but has a lot of people see him as somebody who eats with a fork, so he's can't be completely MAGA. But I think he is, and I think that's he's the kind of dangerous MAGA candidate who's a little better than the Matt DiPernos and their appeal to a lot of people. So Mike Pence was also raising money for him and furthering what I think is a very dangerous candidate and candidacy.
Yeah, reflecting further on the Pence visit and particularly his endorsement of the voucher proposals, this could be a sign that maybe those proposals are in trouble. With all the DeVos money, why 2 weeks before filing deadline do they bring in the former vice president of the United States to help to pump up the campaign? And we know that those petitions are being distributed by churches and by church schools throughout the state. And there's a real hard press going on, petitions being sent home with kids, to get their parents to circulate petitions in their household, if nothing else. That doesn't sound like a well-funded and successful petition drive. If they are doing that kind of thing, and they've been back through churches and church schools a number of times, Jeff, not just once, but there've been repeated efforts. And now we see Pence coming in like this. I mean, we'll see how many signatures they file come June 1. But this doesn't look like a petition drive that's running very smoothly, like many of the other petition drives in the state, which are struggling to get signatures and allowing things like the massive forgery that we talked about last week. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, well, you and I have talked about this before, that if you've got the the funding, you can normally assume that a group is going to get their issue onto the ballot through paid signatures. But I think what that assumes some economic realities that might not exist today. I think the petition gathering industry is suffering from some of the same labor shortages some of the problems of other industries trying to fill positions. And so this could be an instance where all the money in the world doesn't matter. They could say, look, you know, we're going to give you $100 a signature. You know, you could get rich and retire and build a lake home off of your petition gathering. And if you can't find the people who are qualified to go do this, it doesn't matter how you might as well be offering them $1 million a signature. If the labor force just doesn't exist. And I think what appears to be massive systemic forgery in these nominating petitions, and there's likely to be spillover and parallel problems, forgery and quality control when it comes to these issue petitions. I think that this is exposing the fact that it may not matter how much money you have. There's just the market is too saturated. There's too many petitions out there. There's not enough people to circulate them. And that might be also what we're witnessing here with this last gasp for and it could apply to a lot of petition drives.
No, I think you're right. This forgery problem is growing. In addition to the 8 circulators, we identified in our challenge to Craig. I've been looking at the challenges, the other candidates alleging forgery, and there's at least 13 other individual circulators who I believe, based on the evidence I've seen, engage in forgery. So that's 20 individuals right there that we know of that may have forged signatures. And if they show up on any of these issue ballot proposal petitions that get filed, you know, you're just asking for intense scrutiny. If any of these groups happen to have employed these folks unknowingly, you can't file their signatures after what's going on in the gubernatorial primary on the Republican side. So June 1 has just gotten much more interesting as well in light of all of these developments. But, you know, there were some other developments this week, Jeff, on the political front. In a new move, I'll call it, the Secretary of State has disqualified nearly a couple dozen candidates from the ballot based on what's called their affidavit of identity, which is a form that all candidates have to file. Gives a lot of identifying information, has to be sworn to under oath. Traditionally, the Secretary of State, you know, I'm not blaming anybody, but they were given kind of perfunctory scrutiny. And they would only really take a hard look at them if there were challenges made. Some private individual said that person's not qualified. Here's that defect. This year, for the first time that I'm aware of ever in the 40 years I've been practicing election law, we've learned this week that the Bureau of Elections, which are run by the Secretary of State, is actually going through every affidavit of identity, whether it's been challenged or not, scrutinizing it for defects and holding those affidavits to pretty strict standards. And so a press release came out yesterday, which, like I said, looks like it disqualified nearly 24 people, many of whom weren't challenged and probably thought they were fine. Then off the ballot, subject to going to court. And this could have a dramatic impact. I mean, we see State Senator Betty Alexander tossed off the ballot. She's an incumbent running in a district. So that if that stays, it throws that race Democrat wide open.
So this isn't just incumbent Democrat. This isn't just a partisan move.
Yeah. No, it Melissa Carone, who was trying to run.
She's been disqualified twice this year.
Twice, that's right. And a couple, and this is going to have some impact in what happens in the Republicans in the state house, two supporters of Trump and of in Republican primaries, John Rocha and Chase Turner, were disqualified yesterday, and they are part of apparently Maddox's effort to become the next Republican leader in the state house. And so if those hold, that puts a serious damper on his ambitions to be leader there. So this was really just an extraordinary development yesterday that this kind of scrutiny is now going on for these affidavits.
It was extraordinary. And it's the kind of thing that is you know, you have to be a serious political junkie to kind of get down into the weeds and even pay attention to stuff like this. But it is game changing potentially in its application here in a good way. I've been a critic of Republican secretaries of state and this now Democratic secretary of state. That Michigan's campaign finance laws, the enforcement of the finance laws, lack teeth in a lot of ways. That's not necessarily the fault of the person who's the secretary of state. But what this does, this is some big teeth that are suddenly showing themselves when it comes to campaign finance. Because this, what in most instances, the most notable disqualifications here involve a section of that affidavit of identity that they have to attest they don't have any outstanding campaign finance issues, that all their committee reports are filed, that they don't have any unpaid fines, blah, blah. And it might sound like mumbo jumbo to people. Okay, this is just some, you know, some paperwork. But this is the kind of thing that's transparency when it comes to the money in politics. We can have a debate about the money in politics, and you and I might have some differing opinions on that in normal times. But right now, what it says is, we're just not going to let you lie. These people said they don't have any issues. All these, I think it was 11 candidates, including an incumbent Democratic state senator who was disqualified, because they have unfiled campaign reports and they have unpaid fines. Very simple, you know, matter. Face check says, well, we just punch a button in our system. It says, no, you have unpaid fines and unfiled reports. So you signed a false affidavit. You are ineligible to run. That's a big deal. And I was glad to see it. It was a bold move by Jocelyn Benson in her office. Give her great credit. Probably going to suffer some blowback because there are Democrats in there, including an incumbent legislator. And so this is doing the right thing, looking at a problem from a different angle. That's all this took, because apparently any of the secretaries in the past could have done this, but didn't. And so, you know, I don't think this isn't a crusade. This isn't a secretary making up powers they don't have. This is saying, hey, this is what the law says and what the law allows us to do. And, you know, gosh darn it, we're going to do the right thing. All you have to do is file your paperwork, pay your fines. Tell voters and the public who's supporting who you're accepting money from, who you're paying money to when it comes to your campaigns, that kind of transparency, the basic, fundamental, simple transparency that all of us expect in campaigns, is what's being enforced and upheld here. So, congratulations to Jocelyn Benson. It's going to be interesting to see, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of litigation here. All these people are going to say, wait a minute. They're going to be all,
yeah.
Wait a minute. I'm just going to go quietly into the night.
Yeah. I've been warning my clients for months, you know, to do exactly what you just described. You know, make sure all your fines are paid, your reports are up to date, and don't lie in your affidavit. And I can tell you, I was quite relieved last night not to see any of my clients on this list. But my phone has been ringing off the hook the last 24 hours from people who are on this list. Sure. Say, Mark, what can I do? What can I do now?
Invent a time machine. That's good advice, Mark. That's my legal advice.
Yeah.
But this, I guess, illustrates something that's really, really interesting. You mentioned June 1st, right around the corner when it comes to these petition drives. We're going into next week on May 26th. The Board of State Canvassers is going to be looking at these challenges to three of the leading, and I'll put my asterisk on leading candidates, Republican candidates for governor in Michigan, because they're all a bunch of, you know, it's just a clown car full of incompetence. The Republicans are going into June, into this home stretch of their primary, into the home stretch of the campaign, and they still don't know who their candidate, their field of candidates who are going to be on the ballot in August are. And the, this is an extraordinary circumstance where we talked about this last week and the week before. James Craig, who by default is the leading candidate, public opinion polls show him as the only candidate in the Republican side, polling in double digits. I think he's somewhere between 20% and 25% of the vote in these polls. He seems almost certain to not be a candidate. That the Board of State Canvassers, that the Bureau of Elections is going to likely, in my estimation, and I was on the Board of State Canvassers for a number of years. What I think we could see next week is that the Bureau will recommend that Craig, and possibly Perry Johnson and possibly, Tudor Dixon be disqualified. Now we could see a situation where the board, the two Democrats, joined by Tony Daunt, who's showing a fierce, streak of, I guess the Republicans would call it independence. I would just say, a streak of siding with right over wrong. He might go along. And if we could get a 3-1, that's, I think, a game changer. But we could see a deadlock and the canvassers with a 2-2 vote. And so then again, off to the races, litigation, to disqualify these candidates. We could be going into June and still with litigation looming and have no Republican candidate who's polling in double digits. And this is, you know, last week on this podcast where I announced the candidacy of my pants have at this point is legitimate a shot. You know, nobody's getting more than, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8% of the vote. And, you know, that is really, really extraordinary. Really extreme.
Right. And Jeff, and you make a good point. I mean, this uncertainty could last for another month. There is a looming deadline because now we have to get absentee ballots available to voters and out to voters starting in roughly mid-June. But I could see litigation and fighting over who's in this Republican field lasting up until that day. Once the Board of Canvassers makes a decision next week, you're right. It's off to the races, off to the courts at that point. And we'll see how it all plays out. And that just, I mean, it kind of freezes everything in place, right?
Right.
If you're a donor, why would you want to give money to Craig or Johnson, you know, if they may not, you know, be there in a week or so? And the same thing with the other candidates. You know, I think it really does impact them as well because there's just enormous uncertainty about what this field looks like. Who do I attack? Who do I campaign against? Who do my allies out there with super PACs? Who do they raise money and attack? I mean, you know, there's just not enough certainty here for anybody to do any effective campaigning.
One thing I have not looked into, and I'm curious, I'm going to as soon as we're done recording this this episode of the podcast, is since the challenge to his petition signatures have been filed, has there been any interruption or change in the spending pattern by Perry Johnson? You know, Perry Johnson to this point has been funding his own campaign out of his own pocket. So Perry Johnson has decided winning the Republican nomination is worth X number of million dollars that he's willing to just light on fire, perhaps, to pay for and underwrite his candidacy for the nomination. At some point, you know, is he throwing good money after bad if he's not even going to be on the ballot? Has there been any pause in his television advertising, for instance? I don't know the answer to that. I'm curious. But as litigation were to, if there is protracted litigation here and a challenge, you know, does the guy keep spending, you know, $1 million a week on the air, where he might not even be on the ballot ultimately? I would think that's pretty bad business. That's not good quality guruism right there if he is. So that has a very real effect on the trajectory of this race, because Perry Johnson was off to a trajectory where he was just going to bury everybody in spending. But if that is, if there's any blunting of that trajectory, any alteration, that could also have serious implications, however this is ultimately decided.
Right. I mean, because, you know, with this accelerated absentee voting schedule that we've got now, absentee ballots are due to go out in a month, right? And so people should be campaigning now, because otherwise people are going to get those absentee ballots in the Republican primary in June, and they're not going to have been educated about who these candidates are. And that makes it a real crapshoot.
You can't beat somebody with nobody. So I would certainly much rather be Governor Whitmer and in her position, the position of her campaign. But it seems like the Republicans are going to really put that to the test this year. And they may be trying to beat her with nobody willing to step forward to be the standard bearer for the Republican Party. You're going to get, you might see none of the above win when, on August 2nd when the votes are counted. That is all the time we have for this week. We'll be back next week, hopefully. Our special guest will be political guru Mike Murphy, co-host of the Hacks on Tap podcast.
And as always, we welcome your comments, suggestions, and criticism. Send us an email, therepublicpodcast@gmail.com.
And if the Republic is still standing next week, we will be back. I'm Jeff Timmer.
And I'm Mark Brewer. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on all major podcast sites. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.